The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And this is going to be the most interesting one because I'm at Archive, maybe the best wine bar. No, actually, it is the best wine bar in Toronto. Yeah, in Toronto. That voice you hear is winemaker Andre Preux,
I'm not a winemaker.
What would you call yourself? You help. You assist in the making of the
vigneron,
wine.
Vigneron, perhaps.
Vigneron.
It's. I think it's the thing like with the term sommelier.
Right.
I try to be very careful with giving credit where credit is due. But I'm one of the owners of the ADX Wine Company.
You know what? Fair point. And then the man to my right, even though it's a podcast and no one cares where anyone is winemaker Adam Kern. Adam, thanks so much for being part of the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
You are the newbie. Well, Andre, this is the third time you've been on it. Now you've set a record for the most times ever on the pod.
Hooray.
And I'll start with you, Andre, just because Adam is doing the more important job. He's opening wine. Yeah. Why are we here today at the incredible, and again, another shout out to Archive, on Dundas West, just a little bit west of Bathurst.
We're about to do the product launch, which is going to be a sneak peek of our 2022 vintage of Pinot Noir Rosé called When Pigs Fly that some of your listeners probably have heard of. We're getting into more and more places, which has been nice, but we're giving some friends and family and journalists a sneak peek.
Okay.
Because we're still selling through our 2021 because logistics are fun.
Yeah. And then, by the way, when you get into making wine, I'll throw this out to both you guys. Is there anything further from the image of making wine, selling wine, than logistics of wine?
I mean, that's essentially my everyday life.
Logistics and cleaning. Those are the two things that when like we got into this project that surprised me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've just been talking to people about this actually a lot this week, which is strange, where it's just like, I don't think a lot of people, when they pick up, whether it's a bottle of wine or, you know, a jar of peanut butter, think about all the steps that go into that. Like if you're craft manufacturing peanut butter, chances are you're dealing with a different company who prints your labels, a different supplier who makes your jars for you,
right,
a different company that makes the boxes for you that you put the peanut. Okay, like if you're big enough like craft, you might own all those things, but it's just like when you make a bottle of wine, it's a different company that makes the corks, makes the capsules, makes the wax, makes the bottle, makes the labels.
Then there's cleaning, then there's delivery and 100 other things. Adam, how did you get aboard with this project? Tell me a little bit just about your relationship with Andre, because you're the newbie here, you know.
Yeah.
Andre's the vet.
Well, I don't know. I guess we go back to 2019 for my first vintage with the ADX crew. So yeah, I guess Andre approached me. He said he was looking for a winemaker that could do their batch of virtual wine label, I guess, or their virtual wines. And I have a little bit of experience with that already, and I've known Andre for a number of years now. So I was really excited to do it. I thought it was a really cool project, and luckily I qualified. So I was born in the 80s, so I pre-qualified for
that
one.
Yeah, by the way, your ages company, which is ADX Wine Company out there, everyone listening, go check it out. Yeah. What about those old fogies like me, born in 1975? I feel I'm being aged out.
No. It's at the time that we founded the company. So we founded the company in 2015. I think we've told this story on here before, but I'll tell it real quick. There was an article from a New York newspaper. I think it was The Post, so like not the best newspaper, but it was making the rounds about how millennials are destroying the wine industry.
Oh, yeah. I always love those stories every couple of years.
So we decided to take ownership of it. Like when the three of us founded the company, it was just like that was my idea, because we're not doing anything like super duper avant-garde. Like we're not making purple wine from the moon or anything like that. Like
yeah,
we're trying to make just tasty wine that we like to drink and that our friends and family like to drink. And if that's destroying the wine industry, we wanted to take ownership of that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you guys are making Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, Pinot-based rosé. That's not exactly...
For now.
Yeah, for now. It's not exactly like some crazy...
Next up, orange wine.
Nope.
No. Let's... Yeah, not... You know, we'll move on from orange wine. Well, Adam, what are your qualifications? Like, just... I'd love to hear a little bit more just about your background in winemaking.
I'm a graduate of the Niagara College program, so I did that way back in 2005 is when I went. Graduated 07. So I've been kicking around the industry for a number of years now.
Yep.
I've worked at a number of pretty great wineries, I think, in the area. So I've worked at, you know, places like Hidden Bench and Pearl Morissette and Foreign Affair. Worked out in the county for a couple of years as well. So, you know, it's a pretty wide repertoire, especially in the Ontario wine industry. Did get a chance to go down to New Zealand and work there for a while.
Where in New Zealand?
Place in Marlborough, so kind of the big epicenter of, of big production, a place called Jackson Estate. So yeah, nice spot, made some really great wines, and you know, gave me a good perspective on larger scale winemaking. Everything I've done for the majority of my career has been very small scale.
Your feelings about Ontario wine, either Niagara or the county, how different is it now in 2023 than when you started?
Well, there's been a lot of movement. One thing I always say is that, you know, like, we can't make any progress that isn't built upon those that came before us. So,
right.
You know, there was, when I first got into the industry, you know, it was, you know, the program was just starting up. There was a lot more excitement about the quality of wines that we were making in the area beyond just ice wine. Ice wine obviously was what kind of rooted the industry from a qualitative standpoint in the 90s. But, you know, I think we've evolved a lot in style, and I think we've evolved a lot in, you know, how we express the wines that we have and kind of paring it down. I may be speaking too soon. I don't know if all of Niagara's pared down well, but I think we're starting to get the idea of where we want to be.
It's better than what it was when it was like, when, you know, they tried 17 different varietals.
I think I'd agree with what you're saying, Adam. And I think what we're seeing right now, and Matt, like, I guess all three of us drink a lot of Ontario wine. We're at the point where we're seeing cream rise to the top.
Yes.
And, you know, I think there might be some people who are just like, oh, like, another great Niagara Pinot got a high score from such and such a critic. And I don't think it's the critics who are going out of their way to seek the Niagara Pinot. I think the Niagara Pinot is rising to the top because it's suited to the climate, as hard as it is to grow, and we can consistently make high-quality wines with it. And even though we have Chardonnay in our glass, we could probably segue that nicely into the Pinot Noir that we've got.
We'll do the Pinot second, but tell them a little bit about the damn Chardonnay, the 2020 damn Chardonnay.
I'm going to let Adam do the technical part.
Okay.
Yep. But we were looking for Chardonnay in 2020. It was a great summer. The company had done pretty well in spite of the pandemic. I think there may have even been a little bit of, like, survivor's guilt on our side that our company was doing better than a lot of wineries, which isn't a side, but we told Adam we were looking for Chardonnay. We were looking for good Chardonnay to work with. And he gives me a call, and he's just like, oh, I've got this farmer in Four Mile Creek that has Chardonnay for sale. And I was just like, oh, interesting. Like, I'd love to work with Niagara. And, like, Adam knows, he joked with me when he came onto the project, like, are you trying to make wine from every sub-appellation in Niagara? And I said, yes, and beyond. And I was just like, okay, cool. Which farm is it in Niagara? And he was just like, oh, it's Irv Wilms Farm. And I think even before he finished saying his name, I was just like, yes, we're buying that fruit.
Oh, hell yeah. And for people listening, and it's one of the cool things just about where we are with Ontario wine, I see the label. I'm like, oh, Wilms. Okay, I know that. I know it's an area that is quality. You know, Batchelder and a lot of others have been talking about it. You have as well.
Yeah, and but I mean, that's it, though, is for me as a journalist, like, the 2017s were sleepers in terms of quality of wine. And around 2020 is when a lot of the premium 2017s started to roll out. Thomas Batchelder's 2017 Wilms Vineyard Chardonnay is one of the greatest Chardonnays I've ever had in Niagara. I stand by that. I still stand by that. And also from a winemaker, from a company perspective, I'm doing this. We're all doing this to learn. And Niagara-on-the-Lake Chardonnay doesn't make sense to me because you have it drilled into you as a wine lover that you need limestone, so bench. You need limestone, so go county. Irv Wilms will tell you that there's some limestone in his vineyard. I'm sure there is, but it's sand and clay, right, Adam?
Yeah, it's predominantly, it used to be known as Sandstone Vineyard.
Yeah.
So they used to be part of the 13th Street group.
Yep.
And so when they parted from that, they 13th Street kept the name. yeah, I mean, the site's very sandy. It's very flat. It's kind of in the middle of Niagara Lake. So it actually doesn't benefit from a lot of the lake effect that you'd expect it to. It just gets warmer in the summer and colder in the winter.
By the way, that is now I'm confused, like, Andre, because you're right. I hear words like flat and sand.
Yep.
And then immediately my brain goes to Ernest and Gallo.
Right.
You know, like, that's kind of where that's just where it goes to.
But I mean, Thomas's Wilms Vineyard Chardonnay, though, like, as wine lovers are, I think, fairly objectively on that front line. Like, I'm wearing a Leafs jersey. They're my Mitch Marner or Austin Matthews and my draft picks for Chardonnay from Ontario.
Yeah, it's their scale, too. You know, when you think of Ernest and Gallo. I mean, they're buying it from Central California, right? Yeah. So it's a completely different area, quite warm. And while we call Niagara Lake the hot spot of Niagara, it's still a cool climate. It's still this really special place. And one of the things that I think is most special about that vineyard in particular is how old it is. So these are 30, 35-year-old vines now.
Another part of the ADX. They were planted in the 1980s.
Right. I mean, yeah, literally, this vineyard was planted.
So they're millennial. Those are millennial vines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they're our age. They want to be with us. So yeah,
they can't afford property, and they're destroying things. So that's it's also just a reminder. You know, you think old vines, you don't, your mind doesn't go to Ontario. But once you get to 30 years, that's pretty impressive.
I mean, it's one of the things, though, where I've been a little bit relieved, having had a chance to do some wine travel, and I'm sure all of us as wine lovers, like in France, they generally don't start putting old vines on bottles until 40, 50 years old, and even then it's not a regulated term. And I think we used to see old vines thrown around a little bit more loosey-goosey in Niagara, and now people are pulling back on that, realizing as the quality of the wine's getting better, like, oh crap, like our vines aren't actually that old, but we're getting to the point where these vines are actually old vines.
Yeah.
So the Shard, if you want to do any technical and just what we're drinking, I will just say it's fantastic. As you know, Andre, both you and I are unabashed, always going to be Chardonnay lovers, and just nice, rich nose, good acid. This is a lovely Shard.
Thank you very much. Kind of you to say.
So what should people know on the technical side? I mean, obviously not going to all the details, but just a couple of the quick hitters.
I mean, it was a warm vintage. So for us, you know, like the winemaking side of things, we had to hold back. There's a lot of restraint in making this wine. So we're trying to make sure that we still have the texture, we still have a nice acidity. We've tried to make sure we've got nice savory texture and mouthfeel to the wine. So, you know, it's a wild ferment, barrel fermented, aged for, I forget how long we aged this, but a good...
It was almost 2 years.
It was almost 2 years. I think, you know, at least 18 months before it was pulled out of those barrels.
Yeah, and 20 would have been a little bit tougher on the whites just because, as you said, it was a really warm vintage. So
cool nights.
You know. Oh, okay.
Cool. Like that was the thing that blew my mind, and I know Adam, like as a winemaker and as a technical winemaker, like I'm going anecdotally, like I remember 16 vividly, but I remember 16 vividly also as a human being, where we would get the hot spells, but it would stay hot like day and night, 30 degrees day and night, where 2020, yeah, it might be 30 during the day, but it would at least drop down to 24 at night.
Right.
Yeah. Like, am I remembering that right?
I think so. Okay. I mean, I think we did have good diurnal swings in temperature, and it was it lends itself to good wines. I mean, I think you're right, because the whites of 2020 are so strong in general. I mean, it was actually quite a challenging vintage from a winemaking perspective. There was a lot of struggles in the vineyard, in the cellar. Ferments really struggled, and that was very widespread that year, in particular for whites and for wild or feral fermentation. So it was a challenge, but I think we ended up with really great wines because the season was such a great growing season.
Right.
I remember 07 well. That was my first vintage out of the college, and it was one that kind of took everyone by storm. Everyone's talking about, oh, the reds are great, but a lot of the whites just didn't make it, and it was it was so hot, vines were shutting down, acids were dropping really quickly. And to be fair, I think that gave a lot of winemakers the experience that when we come into these warm vintages now, we kind of know what to expect. We go, like, this could be very Californian. Like, we could be drying up and shriveling grapes on the vine.
Right.
Bringing stuff in at 26 bricks and going, oh, shoot, our alcohol's going to be pretty high. So
yeah, it's like the old cliche that failure is one of the greatest teachers. Any other thoughts on the Shard before we move on to the Pinot?
I just have a story I want to share, because we did indigenous ferment, which is something that we've experimented with in the past, but this was the first time we did it start to finish. But I remember going down to the production facility in January and visiting Adam there, and he had brought a bunch of blankets from home because it was getting a little chilly at Rockway, and the ferment had slowed down or almost stopped.
Yeah.
And he was wrapping, this was made in 500 liter puncheons.
Right.
And he was wrapping the puncheons in blankets with, like, if when you say that this wine is made with love and care, like,
yeah.
He was literally swaddling the barrels to try to get the ferments to keep going.
And that was on the Shard?
Yeah, yeah.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious. I love the idea of you have all this technology and you're doing your best in the vineyards and you're pruning properly and doing everything right. And in the end, one of the ways the wine survives is by getting blankets from your home and wrapping it like you would a dog that fell into a cold pond.
Well, yeah. I mean, there are babies, right? It's I very much see my role in the cellar. Like we had growers that put all our blood, sweat, and tears into growing this fruit. That there are people who like put lots of effort into it, and I've got to show the same respect in the cellar. So.
Yeah, I love you talking about that too, about like the growers too, and just like a tiny asterisk as well is like the wine. Apart from the fact that it's delicious, like I think one of the first wines that I have to temper how much I drink because you don't get high on your own supply.
Yeah,
but the happy memories associated with it, because 2020 was such a like it was the pandemic year.
Yep,
and having the group of friends who were eager to help us handpick, we handpicked it as a team. Adam did a great job training all of our friends who had never been.
That was an easy year for it, though, to be fair.
Yeah, to be fair. But I mean, like, it was one of the first times we were able to get together. Like, the vineyard owner, Irvin Esther, like, they had to read us the rules set out by the government on how to properly social distance in the vineyard to do the harvest.
Right.
And, like, but it was still, like, a supremely happy memory that we were able to get together and, like, be distanced.
Well, you were able to be with humans. You were able to be outside. You weren't trapped in your home streaming Tiger King. You know, like you were able to be out there, be productive, and be around nature. I mean, just psychologically, that obviously. Yeah, and by the way, I could see how you get the survivor's guilt because, you hear the stories of the horror stories of people being locked in a 450 square foot basement apartment.
And that's
and
it.
You were out there in nature.
Well, like, we doing wine deliveries to the restaurants that did the bottle shop switch quick enough. Like, Guillaume and I, like the other business partner who may or may not make an appearance later, like we would rail down the QEW on an empty highway because wine was considered essential. And from a mental health standpoint, to be able to like get out of the house from Toronto and drive down to Niagara was like so profoundly healthy for us. We were really lucky that year.
Yeah. I remember my girlfriend Amy, her cottage, we spent so much time up there in 2020, like up in Parry Sound. It was just nice to get out of the city. Anyway, enough about the bad memories. Woo!
These are good memories. Like, no, they're silver lining memories.
They are silver lining memories, but they got a shadow on them. Let's get to this red. This Gamay is killer.
This is not an ADX Gamay.
Okay, what is it? What are we drinking here?
So Adam's a humble dude. I'm going to introduce Adam on this. Adam's a humble dude, but I've actually been teasing him because when we bottled the next red we're going to taste, we actually bottled a bunch of wines from a soon-to-be unleashed virtual label. And Matt, I think you're the first journalist, not counting me, to taste these wines.
Yep.
This is a fantastic Gamay.
From the Wilms Vineyard, which is why we're pouring it next, so that we're doing a
Wilms
side by side. And the virtual label is Kern & Company. And we are joined by the winemaker of Kern & Company, Adam Kern.
Oh, there you go. Cheers to you.
Well, cheers.
This is a fantastic Gamay. I mean, you didn't see it, but we smelt it, and both Andre and I, we both had that look, that goofy look, that, ooh, like, this is fun, like, just powerful nose. There's just a cornucopia of red, fresh fruit coming at you, little dark spice underpinning on it. This is great. Tell
still
the story.
Still, like, killer tannic structure, though. Like, usually from Niagara, I expect the tannins to be a little shorter, a little narrower, and a little more accessible from the onset, but this is, like, this is a behind-the-scenes thing. Is like I push Adam because ADX, our goal is to get the wines to market, get into restaurants quickly. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I could count the number of times Adam has sighed when I'm just like, nope, we're getting this to market in August. And he's just like,
That's the classic struggle, really. It's winemaker always wants more time.
So Adam obviously has a full control over Kern & Company, and this is not ready to drink yet.
Yeah, this is, this is my own project. This is something where it's winemaker-led. The whole concept is it's a partnership between winemaking and wine growing, and so I'm Adam Kern, so I'm making the wines, but the company is the people I work with. So I can't do anything that I do without the efforts of the people I work with. So obviously that's the growers first and foremost. You know, they buy these vineyards or properties, plant vineyards, planning decades in advance.
Right.
They take you know, excellent care of this fruit. And then they work with, you know, difficult winemakers like myself who are like, well, you know, if you could crop it down a little bit more, that'd be really great.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to stop for a quick second. Then we'll continue. Because the humility here, Andre. Andre, do you know what Adam sounds like? This sounds like a hockey player who got the first start. And the first thing he does is, it's like, Austin Matthews, you had a hat trick. You know, how about your performance? Well, you know, it's a team effort. I couldn't have done it without my team. And, you know, those guys all set me up. And Samsonov and Ned, we don't get this done without him. Sorry. Continue about this delicious gamay.
Right. But yeah, I mean, it's true. It is true. And I think that's important to recognize. So that's the premise of it, and then the other you know drive behind it is to recognize what Niagara does really well. I'm Niagara focused. Not that I wouldn't work with other regions in Ontario or elsewhere, but you know I want to really hone it in. I think talking about millennials in the industry, talking about our role. I mean, we need to usher this industry into the next generation. And I think part of our role now is to kind of refine what has been done really well. You know, Andre touched on, you know, the different varieties, like why Pinot's showing up more and more. And I think, you know, you have the same caliber of winemaker making the best Niagara Pinots there are. Yeah. And the same caliber is making the Cab Sauves and the Merlots and so on. And so the reason that certain varieties show is they're well suited. So I'm trying to really focus on that. I'm working on Chardonnay, Gamay, Cabernet Franc is my three main varieties.
Which all work. I don't know if you want to say anything negative because it's a fun, happy, positive podcast, but people that work and try to do 100% Cabernet Sauvignon, I look at it and go, huh, you like having a difficult life.
I agree.
Yeah. I mean, it just doesn't work here.
That being said, I was just writing some tasting notes about the 2020 Cabernet Sauvignon from Chateau des Charmes.
Mm-hmm. A hot year. And listen,
the whatever was done at that winery in that year was restrained. Like it was 13%. Where I've also tasted the Cassava Cabernet Sauvignon from 2020.
Yeah,
and I expect Vadim to make something 15% alcohol in a hot year. I'm not disagreeing that Cabernet Sauvignon. Like I agree with you on the hard life. Like the whole thing is like we all laugh a little bit about Stratus who make delicious wines. Mm-hmm. But it's just like, has Stratus harvested their Cabernet Sauvignon? Well, I don't know. Is it Christmas yet? Like that's a joke that we have there.
Only wine people are going to laugh at that joke. Everyone else is like, huh? What is funny about that? And by the way, I always mispronounce it. Icellars.
It's the Icel family.
Their Cabernet, fantastic. I've tried an Old Lely Cabernet Sauvignon, fantastic.
Yeah.
But I would think about 80% of the time when I try a Cabernet, like 100% Cabernet wine, I'm like, it's just not for me.
Green Cabernet Sauvignon from Niagara is not delicious.
No, it's not.
Green. Making sure it's clear, it's green.
Yeah, I think it's like anything, right? I mean, you've got varieties that are well-suited, and if you think of it like maybe it's a dartboard, right? And it's sort of the ones that are at the center, you're gonna hit them more often, right? Yeah. And then it's the ones at the peripheral, you're going to struggle a little bit more.
Yeah.
And I think it boils down to discipline, right? So if you are a Cab Sauv-focused winery in Niagara, it means that like some years you're going to absolutely knock it out of the park, and other years you are not going to make your $50 or $100 bottle you're really hoping to make. So. Yeah. I think it's discipline to make sure that you're not charging or classing up a wine that isn't at that level, or not declassing something that's of a higher level. So it's doable, but I'm trying to do the thing that hits every single year. And
yeah,
you know, when we talk about this Gamay, like I'm a fan of, you know, Village Beaujolais. Like I love the meteor.
This is pushing into Cru Beaujolais, dude.
Yeah. Like, look at the humility again. Yeah. He went with Village. You can do better. Oh yeah, this is sort of a poor man's Beaujolais Nouveau.
but Matt, like even well-made Village is generally made with the drink now mentality, and it's like this isn't that you over-extracted anything. This isn't that you over-oaked it. Like, you just structured this wine because you're waiting for the future.
Yeah, it's true.
When are you releasing this, fella?
Hopefully soon. We are launching our website this coming month. Yep. So
what would that website be called for eventually when people hear this?
It's kernkowine.com.
It's what again? Sorry?
You check.
By the way, it's hilarious. You're the, you know, as the winemaker.
As the winemaker,
you might not remember the...
But yeah, kernkowine.ca or
kernkowine.ca.
So that's the website we'll be launching soon. Really excited to get that going.
Also, should give a shout out to Andre here. My girlfriend made a mistake. You were pouring the third red and Amy had a little bit left of the second red, and she put the glass in front. And you, and see, this is what a wine person knows. You're peripheral. You always know what's in everyone's glass at every time. And you were pouring the third wine. Amy was finishing the second. And you immediately did a hard U-turn. Like, no. You got to finish before I pour the next wine.
Yep, of
course.
Good
for you. Yeah. It's a classic party thing. Like, and I'm sure you add me the same way. Anytime at a party, I always know where my glass is. I always know what's in my glass. I always know what's in everyone else's glass. So I know what to pour each person. Like, it's just, it's habit.
Yeah. No, that's great. I like that.
So what do we got for we are drinking the 2019 Rough Pinot Noir from St. David's Bench. I don't know much about St. David's Bench.
St. David's Bench, there are a handful of wineries. You'll probably know most of them. You have Queenston Mile, make great Pinot. You have Ravine, great growers. You have Five Rose, and you have Chateau des Charmes. Did I miss any? I know there's a couple of growers popping up there. There's the Bock Vineyard.
There's a few growers. I mean, Culinary, I believe, is
Culinary as well. So we got this wine from one of the wineries. We try to put the winery name and vineyard name. They proudly gave us the fruit, but they would not let us put the name on the bottle, which is fine.
Okay.
Yeah, it's for branding purposes is the main reason. But we were very excited to get this fruit.
Can I swear on this podcast?
Yeah, of course.
It's called Rough Pinot Noir because 2019 was a dog shit vintage.
Right, yeah.
I thought it was going to be the worst vintage that I've ever seen as a writer, as a consumer, and also as a business owner now, until 2021 said, hold my beer.
Yeah, 2021, takes the cake. For me, the vintage before that was 06, where it was, although the wines turned out really great, but 06 was like the rains would stop and we'd all run out to the vineyards to start picking. It was just insane.
Yeah, 2019 wasn't that. It was just like cool summer where it was like the race to ripen. It's like this is
12% alcohol, like, on the Rough Pinot Noir.
Like, we won't get into more details, but like barely 12% alcohol.
Okay, so you rounded up a little bit. It's probably like 11.8 or something.
No, it was 12. Like, it was 12, but it was like 12.0 on the dot.
Okay.
Yeah, we just made it. So it was a challenging year. This is my first year. So this is a special wine for me because it was my first year with ADX.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
You and Guillaume hand sorted the fruit because I was in France while the harvest took place.
Yeah.
Pretty convenient, Andre. Pretty convenient.
Hey, I've been in the vineyard. I've been in the vineyard a lot.
And by the way, for both of you guys, I always love asking winemakers and wine owners this question. What are the key points that defines a great vintage versus a bad vintage? And by bad vintage, kind of what I mean is just a hard year for everyone in the fields and in the cellar.
Hang on. Let's see if we can newlywed this. I'm going to write down one word. And I'm going to let Adam say his answer.
Okay,
and we'll see if this is right.
Okay, for everyone at home scoring, Andre has written a word, and now it is time for Adam. Let's see if they have a match. Adam, you're up.
Okay, so one word that would describe a bad vintage?
A good vintage.
We're going to start with a good vintage. One word, sir. You have 3 seconds.
I'm going to get a timer now. Normal weather? I don't know.
I said balance.
Balance.
Oh, wow.
The answer was balance. I'm sorry.
Balance.
You don't win the honeymoon trip to Acapulco.
Well, I can get balance. I can get balance in most years. As a winemaker.
Oh, look who's getting a little cocky now, old Adam.
I'm just saying, it's for me, like, that's about listening to the wine, right? So it's about...
What does that mean, listening to the wine?
Okay. But the reason I throw balance out there, though, is in a vintage like 2016, where it doesn't cool down, it's tougher to achieve balance. But all the wine press were, like, losing their minds over the quality of the reds, where my 2016 Chardonnays from many producers are already falling apart.
Right.
Yeah, I guess they lack the acid,
and some wines react better to certain vintages than others. Like this past year, there were all sorts of issues with fermentations again. And I think we have extremely varied vintages here in Ontario, right? So I don't remember two vintages that were exactly or even close to the same. We talk about them as if they're sort of similar, but we're talking like a 50% match. So I think there's a lot that goes on. When we talk about the fermentations, the wild fermentations, like there's all sorts of fauna and flora that are in the vineyards that affect how effective those fermentations are. So, balance is important, but for me, a bad vintage.
Wait, can you write one word of what you think a bad vintage would be? And we'll see if Adam does any better. As Andre is coming up with this on Canada's Hottest New Game Show, the one thing that will the throw, because again, the Pinot's fantastic. Really, by the way, just such a light color to it as well. And I wonder, you're talking about you guys born in the 80s and millennial. The one thing that you could see is the next generation. It's not that they're turning away from Europe. They're turning away from France. But with the prices in Burgundy going up and with the quality locally always getting better, I mean, I could see it where eventually Ontario wines become like one of the number one things purchased by the younger generation who enjoy the idea of farm to table, enjoy the idea of buying local, and aren't as burdened with the, oh, if it's not from Burgundy or Bordeaux, what the hell are you doing?
Hmm.
All right, you got the word there, Andre?
I do.
Okay, so.
Well, it's there's a hyphen between it, but okay. Maybe one word.
All right.
I'm just going to play into what I think you're going to say.
Bad vintage. So I'll say
disjointed.
I went with Nonstop Rain. And literally wrote stop.
So I think we just switched strategies there. Yeah.
I was trying to read your mind.
Don't worry. Listen, you guys are going to get the home board game version of this. That's what I've heard over and over again. Just rain at the wrong time kills a vintage.
It's a thing we're taking. Oh, we are switching roles here. As a writer, I've worked harder. Like as I've really developed my wine knowledge, where I'd say my first like 5 years as a wine writer, because I started in 2010. So 2010, 2012. Where we had good vintages, and then, you know, 13, 14, we had bad vintages. And then I realized, as Adam said, that really good winemakers, people like Taz, people like Hidden Bench, were making killer wines every vintage because they were reading the vineyard. So I've worked really hard as a wine writer and as an advocate for Ontario to eliminate the terminology good and bad vintage from our vocabularies and start saying hot and cold vintage.
Right.
With the exception of 2021, which I think pretty objectively was a bad vintage.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing, is like it's not just hot and cold is what makes it bad, right? I mean, 2021, we had an inordinate amount of rain all at once, and we had crops that doubled or even almost tripled in weight, in actual tonnage, because they sucked up so much water.
Right.
And then we had acids that dropped. And then we had sugars that dropped, and everything just got diluted. And so, you know, with one vineyard that I pulled from, that grower dropped fruit 3 times, and he dropped over half of the crop.
Oof.
And on a normal vintage, that same number of clusters on the vine would have given him maybe 3 tons per acre, which is a very modest yield.
Yeah.
And so he did it 3 times, and he just took it on the chin, because he's paying those guys every time. He didn't ask me for any extra money. And so, you know, he's really trying to do what's best for the wines. And we ended up with a nice product. But that, I mean, that hurt. That was a really rough vintage. So, you know, it's we can end up making a good product. And that's something that I think as winemakers, that's our job to do. You know, when you have a vintage that's really nice and clean, you know, the reason 2020 sticks out in everyone's mind, you could walk through the vineyard and you could pick every cluster and not have to sort a single berry out.
Right.
Which is rare in Ontario, to say the least. Any Pinot producer will know that pain all too well.
I would have loved to have been there when you were teaching your friends in 2020 how to pick the grapes, and how many of those friends were like feeling nervous because you feel this responsibility of do good because this is going right into the bottle.
No. 2020 was actually pretty easy.
Mm-hmm. Even on an easy year, I can imagine some were nervous.
2020 was complete. You have to understand, Matt. 2020 was completely unusual. Like the vineyards looked photoshopped.
Like, so just went to Instagram.
In 21, we had the same thing where Adam gave us the explanation. In 21, the pressure was there.
Yeah.
Like 21, in 2020, we had basically 95% of what was on the vine ended up in the barrel, in the bottle.
That's nuts.
Where in 2021, walking down the rows, and these are people who their livelihood depends on taking care of their vines, maybe 50%, 60% ended up in the bottle. And that was with them trying to take care of their vineyards.
We should talk about the wine that you guys are going to be displaying here. Pigs Are Flying. What do people need to know about the rosé that we're going to be sipping on in a little bit?
You're not supposed to have a favorite child.
Yes, you are. But I was always my favorite child. I'm a twin. I was a favorite.
I'm sick of people telling me with every vintage of When Pigs Fly that we make, oh, it's not as good as your 2017. Oh, it's not as good as your 2017.
By the way, those people are assholes.
But it's fine.
You keep that quietly to yourself. You don't say that out loud.
Our 2017 was like really good. But I just remember this moment where I went down to Rockway to check on the barrels and check on the tanks. And it was just like, hey, Adam, where's the 2022 When Pigs Fly? Oh, it's there and there and there and there. It was in like 5 different vessels, like dude, you turned into like Doc Brown this harvest. But then when the components like all came together, and like we've had some vintages where we've gone down and tasted the ferments, and sometimes things can be a little funky and weird when the wine isn't finished.
Yeah.
And like Adam has always been very good at like defending it, but things always come together at the end. But this time, every step along the way, everything tasted delicious.
Mm-hmm.
I remember 2022 being like a fairly average summer. Wasn't too hot, wasn't too cold. We had a little bit of rain in the fall, not too much, not too little. Like, it was just a good year. Alcohol's low, texture's good. Guillaume has always been trying to get us to do Provence-colored rosé. But we work with what Mother Nature gives us, so we've always ended up darker than that. This is the first year we've come pretty damn close to Provence.
Yeah.
Which Guillaume was happy about, and that's what I have to say about it. I'm really excited about getting it out, so like buy all the 2021 so I can release it, please.
Mm-hmm. And so we're trying again the... What vintage are we going to be trying again?
We'll be trying 2022. I don't know if we're tasting it on the pod, though. Do we want to taste it on the pod?
No. We can wait till afterwards. This is me just sneakily making sure to promote it so people listening to this to go out and find, you know, pigs are flying.
Because we have 15 minutes before we do that, and I just opened two other bottles of wine
for us to taste. Yeah. Absolutely. 100%. What are you pouring now?
These are two more of my wines, of course.
Okay, yeah, another Kern and Company. Yep.
On an ADX podcast, we're bringing out my wines.
Yeah.
Very Andre, thank you.
This is an Adam Kern podcast.
Yeah. So this is a Chardonnay 2018 from a vineyard called Hughes Vineyard. Ed Hughes is the grower, and he's the guy who dropped fruit three times because he was the best thing for the fruit. You know, I can't say enough about how great it is to work with people like that. So it's it makes my job a lot easier. You say I'm humble, but really it's... It can't happen without that effort.
Oh, no, of course. I was making fun. But no, yes, you're standing on the shoulders of the vines, the age, the wine, the grape growers, the farmers, and everyone around you.
Absolutely. And so this is a really nice property. These are some fairly old vines. I think these are getting in the range of 20 years now. But yeah, just a really nice spot, a really nice location for the grapes to grow. So it's Lincoln Lakeshore. Mm-hmm. Clay soils. I'm a bit of a fan of clay soils in Niagara. I think they really bring out some really nice characteristics in Chardonnay.
What I love, I know 5 years isn't crazy old. I understand it, but it's starting to get some age on it, and it's getting that age that I love. Just a little honeyed, a little roasted, little just, you know, almond skin thing going on. Maybe a tiny touch of a Fino sherry, and I mean that in the best possible way, because sometimes people go, you know, they think Fino, and like, oh my God, it's some sort of crazy old vinegared thing, but no.
To me, this has shadows of Meursault to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not Meursault. I think it's lacking some of the concentration you get from Meursault, but like the barrel treatment, the spice notes, it's perfectly balanced with the fruit. It's, you know, it's pear, it's peach.
Yep.
It's not overripe. The spice note is like super duper present, but like I dig that. I really do dig that. It's still like that spice is still hitting the palate on the finish. Like, I think this needs another like year and a half, 2 years for it really to soften and like, yeah, mellow out.
Yeah, I could totally see that. I mean,
Adam, you're the guy who made this, and you're making this because if no one buys it, you have to drink it.
It's true.
What's your vision of Chardonnay? Sorry to steal your...
That's a great question.
Sorry to steal your...
By the way, welcome back, everyone, to the Matt and Andre Talk Wine and Stuff with Interesting Sorry, People podcast. So your vision for Chardonnay. It's an excellent question.
That is an excellent question. It's like you've done this before, Andre. I don't know.
You think?
No, I mean, my vision for Chardonnay is try to express, like with all the wines, I mean, it's try and give them their best shot possible. And so, to me, what that represents with Chardonnay is, you know, I do 100% hand-picked fruit. I do whole cluster pressing. I press cut. I treat them separately, but then I ferment them in barrel. I like the texture that brings. I love the nuance that can bring. I like age in a wine, obviously. I'm releasing 2018s in 2023. So,
wait, so hold on. Wait. You just released this. You're just releasing this now.
Yes.
So a new world Chardonnay producer who's holding on to it for 5 years.
There's a handful of them.
I know, but it's still rare.
I know.
That is rare because you are basically giving two middle fingers to economics and profit.
Totally. And my wife might kill me for it.
Yeah, good for you.
Your wife is a very patient woman.
She is extremely patient.
Yeah. As are you when it comes to your wine. By the way, this is killer. This is a great Chardonnay.
Thank you very much.
That is fantastic. Like, just, yeah, the depth on the finish on this fella. I mean, it just, well done.
And again, thank you.
Wow, so you really hold up. Can I ask just the price point for this wine?
This and the one we're just pouring now will be at $42 to a bottle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're single vineyard, they're small lot.
Yeah, you know. It's a funny thing. I think we need to start doing is stop going, well, you know, the price is, but we do this and this and this. If someone said, oh yeah, this is a hand-picked, you know, a Chardonnay from Burgundy that's got a little age on it, and you said $40, no one would blink.
Right.
But yeah, we still need to justify it in Ontario, which is ridiculous, because that last wine was great. $42, absolutely more than a fair price.
Thank you.
It's a challenge, though. So if I can jump in and talk about, like, the economics side
of
it.
Yeah, go.
I was talking to Adam about this in the car ride in, actually. It's frustrating that a lot of restaurants in the city don't seem to have the appetite for buy-the-bottle pricing for Ontario, because I think, especially in Toronto, so I should say Toronto specifically, is still very rooted in the classics, Burgundy and California, and they need buy-the-glass pricing. And I can tell you from the ADX wines, and Adam, you can be a testament to this as well, too, is, like, we don't cut any corners in the winemaking, but we are budget-driven in our winemaking process so that we can offer wines at the price and quality that we do.
Yeah.
The sacrifice that we're making is cellarability, longevity, you know, for the sake of making sure that we get into restaurants. And I don't know what the straw is that's going to break the camel's back, but we do need to get Torontonians thirsty for premium Ontario wine, because you just said value. That is 100% the case.
That's value wine. That $42 is absolute value.
I'll get off my soapbox.
You were making a wine and you drove home and grabbed blankets, you know, and wrapped it around it. Like the time and attention is there. Everything handpicked, single vineyard, from great vineyards, from older vines. Like, I'm sorry. And this is, again, I say this over and over. This is not me being patriotic. This is not me going like rah-rah Canada. This is just looking at the wine and objectively going, this is a delicious product. And I'm really happy and excited to get to try these. I mean,
well, thank you
very
much.
This is some killer stuff, Adam.
Thank you. Cheers.
Cheers to you.
Sorry, I just got into the next wine. Or did we preface the next wine?
What's that?
I was distracted. We're in a busy bar, if people can't tell from the background.
Yeah, the final one's the Foxcroft 2018.
People know that name.
What's that?
People know that name.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Foxcroft, one of the most famous vineyards in Niagara.
Yes.
If not the most famous. We can debate on another day. We can rank the most famous vineyards in Niagara.
I would say it's definitely up there.
Yeah, probably up there.
It's a contender.
Definitely up there.
Such a sports thing. You want to know. Oh, well, actually, it's number three. we'll finish off on this fella. What do we got to know?
Again, great grower. There's a reason it's one of the most recognized vineyards in Niagara. Really, really great grower as a starting point. But this site in particular is quite well, has really nice exposure to it, exposed to the sunlight. So usually leans into more tropical notes.
It's tropicalism.
Yeah.
Tropical AF.
Yeah. So it definitely leans that direction, but it doesn't lack finesse. It's a true bench site, 20-mile bench. So it's got really nice minerality to it as well. So this is kind of the wine I think has the most longevity to it. I think this is the one that really can punch through. And sometimes they're a little tight in their youth. But again, if you age them.
Pretty approachable right now, man.
Yeah.
Again, 5 years in. So
yeah. Okay. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
You pour me this at a Toronto restaurant, 5-ounce glass, and you say it's $25 a glass. I'm not blinking. Like, I'm not blinking at all. I think the key to this is you got to just put on the label, just call it Burgundy, but with two U's, you know, like, do that. And also, here's my really lame joke. You said it's tropical AF.
Yeah.
You mean AF as in after fermentation?
Oh, yeah, tropical after fermentation.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is
well, I
want to
make sure your show
right
is somewhat family related. Like, yes. I don't want to take you from a PG-13 rating to an R rating.
Yeah,
so.
No, that's true.
But AF does not stand for after fermentation.
I hate myself for that joke. All right. I feel we should wrap this up. Things are getting busy. You guys have your event coming up in a couple minutes.
We're excited.
So promote away. Website, ADX Wine Company. Where can people find your wine?
ADXwine.ca. But lately, people have been sliding into our DMs to get orders.
That's a sexual thing, right? Sliding into the DMs.
You're buying wine. It's meant to bring pleasure. Like, I'm okay with the dots being not that far apart. ADX Wine on Instagram. We do free delivery in the GTA on 6 bottles or more, but the wine is delivered by one of the people who work for the company, so don't expect overnight delivery. No overnight parts from Japan, but like, we're happy to meet our customers and establish the relationships. Like, it's really why we're doing what we're doing.
Adam, any other final promotion for the stuff that you're working on? I'll get you on a pod later on.
Yeah, I mean, check us out, kernkohlwine.com, kernkohlwine.ca, and... yeah, just happy to get it launched.
He's this.is.adam.kern on Instagram.
Yeah,
he doesn't
very
post
literal.
Anything.
Yeah.
All right. I can't wait, Andre, to try the new Pigs Are Flying Rose.
When
Pigs Fly. I don't know why it says Pigs Are Flying.
It's funny that people have all sorts of like iterations of it.
Yeah, I think I cut and pasted a bad invite. Anyway, When Pigs Fly, I can't wait to try your new rosé. I've always been impressed with it. Always been impressed with the Chardonnay. Andre, this has been great. Adam, it's great to see you again. Guys, thanks so much for doing this.
Thanks for having us. This is an honor.
Yeah. Thank you.
Shout out also to Archive Wine Bar. Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, and where quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.